This is Jonathan Lane, and I'm here today with Commander Samuel Cockings. I say Commander because that's how he's known on the regular Trek Yards video podcast, which he's been doing regularly with Captain Stuart Foley for 2.5 years now?
Well, to be fair, more like 3 and a bit, but yeah, quite a while.
And you've done like how many episodes of this?
Oh, about 300 Trek Yards plus the Fleet Yard spinoff and interviews and stuff. It's been a pretty busy few years.
Oh my goodness. And for those of you who don't know about Trek Yards, they do stuff about starship classes and they do reviews of Discovery and they talk to people from the fan film community and from the 3D modeling community. They've had some veterans from Paramount and CBS produce Star Trek, including Doug Drexler, Rick Sternbach, Andy Probert, and John Eaves. If you haven't ever seen Trek Yards, you should go to trekyards.com and check it out. There's so much there to watch through, but it's very, very well produced. That being said, I can tell you that we're not here today to discuss Trek Yards with Samuel. Instead, if you've done what I told you and watched the trailer before listening to this interview, you've probably just been blown away by your first look at Star Trek Temporal Anomaly.
This is all the secret project, it's fair to say. Underground one.
Yes, and in fact, that's the first thing I wanted to ask you about, Samuel. Do you prefer Samuel or Sam? Which one works for you?
Sam's fine. No Commander. That's just on the show. Just Sam's fine.
Okay, just Sam. So I know that you've been working on this project for, what, nearly 5 years now?
Yeah, 2013 we started, so not a long time. It's very early in the crowdfunding fan film world. Very, very early.
So yeah, it was probably one of the first Kickstarters that I think existed for any fan film. In the early days of like Renegades.
But yeah, slightly before Renegades and just as / during the Deception. So yeah, right at the start.
So anyway, you've been working on this for 5 years, but as far as most people are concerned, you've just suddenly decloaked out of nowhere. and so they've seen this. If they're anything like me, they were just blown away by what they saw.
Thank you.
So the first question for you is, why the surprise?
Why keep it under wraps? Well, I filmed it all. Production was done through more than a year. And I basically made it 3 times over the last 5 years. As my skills have got better, as I've got new hardware, as I've been at university finishing my degree in filmmaking, you know, time was never necessarily in my favor. And so every time I sort of finished it, I have to take a break for a while because, you know, the last few steps can sometimes take the longest time, especially visual effects, which I want to do myself. And so every time it would take a while longer, well, I'd get better. And then Trek Yards happened and I learned doing space CG and I learned more and more and more. And then I did a full remaster and then I got a new piece and then I did another full remaster. So it's kind of one of those things where it's been in the background on my mind for 5 years, but I've kept getting better and better, and now it's at a point where I can and definitely should release it.
So over the last 5 years, so you've made it and you've remade it and you've re-remade it. What does that actually mean? So you know, let's go back 5 years. What did you do that you then proceeded to throw out and redo?
Well, I mean, just go back 5 years in computer technology and on a student budget. You know, the PC I had would be a quad-core, minimal RAM, low graphics card, you know, and here I was, thinking I was writing a 20 to 30 minute Star Trek fully green screen fan film with a full 1080p, end up being a 60 minute or 50, 60 minute story. It's that 60 minutes of green screen all need to be keyed, all need to be worked out, and that's very, very strenuous for a PC, and back then it was really a struggle to even process it and work through it. What was the question? what did I redo? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, wait, well, what did you actually manage to do and then decide to throw out? I mean, did you actually film your actors 4 or 5 years ago? Or
well, yeah. No, I mean, everything that I redid was after principal photography. I was done. I had everything. I made sure I had everything in the can, including redubs, ADR, all that stuff done. And then as I made it, you know, I had certain digital backgrounds. I mean, it's a green screen film, so everything had to be digital. And I couldn't use existing screen caps from the show. I mean, for the most part, they're all standard definition. And back then, there was no TNG Blu-rays, no Enterprise Blu-rays, I think. So everything was standard def. And I filmed it very much like a normal indie film, indie show, where There was close-ups, long shots, mid shots, and you just couldn't find the angles of, say, the Voyager bridge that existed to meet what I filmed. And I knew that going in. And so I was using backplates from Star Trek video games because they existed and they were accessible and they were 1080p-able, and then you could do zoom-ins and things. And so I built the first edit on those backgrounds, and obviously it was limited by the quality of the video games and the qualities of the sets. And at the time, you know, before Renegades was released, and that was still in the early-ish days of the heightening of fan films to, you know, a professional level, you know, I thought that was sort of good enough at the time. Just the fact that I could do it, I thought was enough. But then, you know, as technology improved, I then said, oh, okay, I'm going to smooth out the edit a little bit. It was fine, but make it a bit better, change some backgrounds, change the special effects. I mean, doing 50 minutes of CG, space stuff, takes a lot of weeks. And so I would say, damn, I should redo some of these shots and end up redoing all of them. And that took, you know, months to do. And so it's kind of a case of each time I'd get better. The edit mostly stayed the same. I think I haven't touched the actual live action timings of the editing probably since 2014, 2015 maybe, because that was solid. I think I've just been tweaking since 2016, but little things like just smoothing it. But yeah, it's really just, you know, as fan films got better, I had to improve with them. Otherwise, I would have left behind.
So that explains why it took you so long. But why weren't you giving anybody any updates? Like, you know, for example, we've all been waiting for Pacific 201 for the longest time. And, you know, we know that Eric Henry is working on it. We've seen little vignettes of things. You know, we know that First Frontier, you know, is coming out. I even had an interview with Kenny Smith last year. You know, we know that Starship Farragut is going to have Homecoming coming out eventually. Even Axanar, we get updates on that. So all of this stuff, like, okay, we're waiting for it. We know it's coming. We're rooting for it. But nobody, I'm guessing, or very few people in the fan community, knew about Temporal Anomaly and that it was coming. So what was the reason for that decision?
Well, one, I think, unique and kind of, in a sense, sad, but again, what I could do now speaks volumes. Looking back at the Kickstarter, you know, 27 backers. 27. And I know that my family and friends, they probably put in quite a big chunk of that. So I probably had about 17, 18 unknown people give. You know, I barely got the money I needed to buy the extra props. So, I mean, I was looking at, you know, a dozen people that were waiting for it, you know?
And by the way, you made how much in that first Kickstarter?
It was £1,741, which is about, you know, $2,000. But, you know, I pulled some strings and I did some freelance work and got them to pay into the Indiegogo as well, or the Kickstarter as well. So, you know, it was a little bit inflated maybe by some work I was doing, just trying to get that money because I wanted the film to get made. You know, it was all or nothing. You know, and at that point, it was a struggle to get what I got. I mean, my project was ambitious, but my skills were limited at the time. Good in filmmaking terms, but not so much in CG. And we all have our different levels. And so, you know, I even went as far as I did a freelance job and I did get them to put some money in instead of paying me directly, just because it's an all or nothing system. And I knew I needed certain funding to buy the extra props. I mean, I was a university student. I was living on an absolute tightrope. You know, and this was my second year of 4 years of university. You know, so it was, it's one of those weird things. I don't know why I did it necessarily. You know, before that, the year before, I'd done Stargate Universe Distant Hope, which is still the number one Stargate fan film in the world. And they find it on YouTube, just Google it. And that was pretty good. It's a mix of live action and green screen and show footage and stuff. And this was my next project, and it being much, much more ambitious. But yeah, limited money, and I've certainly spent at least another $1,000 of my own money, $2,000 over after the fact. And obviously just time. I mean, I've spent hundreds of hours. Because, I mean, I remember at one point I was doing my final version of the tile sequence in 2015. And it was 2,000 frames. Because I thought, well, no one ever does one-shot shots. So I thought, do one shot. 2,000 frames. It was a 76-hour render.
Oh, boy.
And I had to wait 76 hours to see if it was good enough. And obviously now I've done three versions since. So, I mean, I've spent probably 1,000 hours on this project, probably, and that's just, you know, money out of my pocket in a sense. But the quality I'm at now, I'm so proud. And looking back for this interview, I rewatched my Indiegogo or Kickstarter video. I could not imagine what I've done now, then. And as a Star Trek fan, he wanted to make a Star Trek film with a story he wanted to tell. I'm blown away, you know. And it makes the 5 years worth it, I feel.
Yeah, I think so. In fact, what I might end up doing is taking that original video from your Kickstarter and putting it at the end and showing people where stuff came from.
Yes, it's, yeah.
What do you think? Should I do that or no?
Yeah, it's funny. It's embarrassing, honestly. You know, my long hair, my yeah. I mean, but again, it showed the concept and it showed that I had ambition and what I was trying to do. And you know, I'll tell you the secret of how I did the CG. I used Bridge Commander, which is a game from 2004. You know, in 2013, I found a wonderful thing that turned space green, and so I could key out space, and so I could frame cameras and make shots. And I thought that was good enough because I was showing it at least. And now I'm doing original renders in Lightwave, 1080p at settings that are ridiculous for modern tech, because I've had a recent PC upgrade, which is a big part of why I'm able to put the thing out now. Yeah, just amazing. So yeah, the contrast, and I want to do special feature showing, you know, every year of improvement, because you can see that. And there's a trailer out on YouTube, I think it's teaser one or trailer two, and it shows, you know, 2013, 2014, 2015, and how I improved. Because when I decided I was doing it myself, you know, I had to learn quickly, and I had to learn a lot. I got there eventually.
Actually, if you can send me a link to that, I'll include that as well. Obviously, you know, it's a blog. I put as much stuff on it as I want. Can you tell us a little bit? I mean, I don't want you to spoil the whole thing, but can you tell us a little bit about what this thing is about? Obviously, there's lots of different, you know, Trek time periods, but what can people expect to see?
What do you think we're going to see in a one sentence from what is in the trailer? Because I know. What do you think?
Well, obviously, there's a temporal anomaly. I can tell you that.
Oh, yep. 10 points.
You know, I'm guessing there's, you know, obviously a lot of different ships. Picard seems to disappear, and the crew of the Enterprise mm-hmm. disappear, so, you know, I'm interested in that. Are the other ships that we see the actual ships that we've seen in Star Trek, like the NX-01 and the Voyager, or are they just the classes, you know, ships of that class?
I'll give a little bit of backstory on that. When I was prepping this, you know, I've been a Trek fan since I was 2. I swapped to Stargate in my teens because that was on at the time and we bonded as a family over that. And then Temple Omni got me back into Trek. And for research, I spent weeks working out why the characters are the characters that I've picked. And everyone has a reason. I'll just say that. Everyone has a reason. I even had to work out, because everyone's kind of young. One of the little conceits is that I used all actors in the film. All acting students at my university of different levels I cast and found. And then one acting lecturer. He was the captain, the only captain in the film, and everyone else is an ensign. And that explains the age difference. And also I like the idea of an ensign shouldn't know everything. You know, there's one scene where the TOS character and the Enterprise-Z character is on the bridge of the Connie, you know, Edge of the Constitution class. Why would an ensign know how to fire weapons properly? Like, he would know a certain amount, but he wouldn't know everything. You know, they couldn't fix a ship. They couldn't do this and that. Everyone has limitations because they're only ensigns. And so that creates a certain relatability. And with each era, you know, just like with smartphones now, if you were born in the Voyager era, you look at TOS tech like children's toys. And so suddenly you're thrown into that situation. You can help fix that ship. The other way around, you can't. So it created an interesting paradigm by giving one captain character gave this buffer of experience. So the basic story, as you saw in the trailer, is, you know, as it says on the Kickstarter, which actually gives quite a lot away, Star Trek Temporal Anomaly is the story of an average day aboard the Enterprise-E, which takes place after the incident with Baku, featuring Star Trek Insurrection. An anomaly suddenly forms when the blink of an eye somehow only leaves one ensign aboard the Federation flagship. And then he discovers that other ships have been brought to wherever he is as well, each with only one person on board. So, yeah, it's five, six ships with one person each. And I thought, well, that's a great way to bring the eras together and make it a makeable show. You know, there's a certain ambition having five, six ships, five, six characters, each one rips in each timeline, rather than having five full crews and having five full sets of actors and five full sets of uniforms, you know, as a way of getting around that and make it each character mean something and do something and still show each era and each ship, you know. I will say we do walk aboard the Excelsior class, we do walk aboard the NX-01, you know, the NX class, you know, we see these sets that you have never seen in a fan film before. And that was one of the intentions in 2013. And amazingly, some of these sets we've still never seen represented in a fan film, or at least not in a clear way that isn't just, you know, two screen caps from a show. And to answer that question, yeah, we've got the Enterprise-E as a hero, quote-unquote, ship. You've got the USS Excalibur, which is the Constitution class. And I use the registry from the fan film Excalibur as a little nod to them, so 1705. The USS Excelsior, that is the Excelsior. The USS Galaxy is a Galaxy class. And the USS Mako is the Intrepid class. And the NX-01 is the NX-01. So, yes, yeah, some are the heroes we know, and some are not.
Okay, well, that sounds fair. You want to get a little variety mix up in there. Yeah. You made all these costumes yourself, right? You're a costumer.
No,
okay. Because I know you're a costumer.
No, these are all... Well, I'm a costumer in the sense that I put together costumes. I'm not an, I'm a costumer, not a cosplayer. Cosplayers tend to make their own stuff, like anime costumes. Yeah, I've got a selection of Stargate costumes and Farscape, Doctor Who, and that's all put together from pre-existing things. No, they're all bought on the classic Chinese, cheap secondhand market stuff. The props are where I more focus the budget on. We bought a hero version of the Voyager tricorder, full lights and sounds. That was amazing. I happen to have a first contact phaser rifle. That's in the film because I always love that rifle. So a bit of budget there. So no, they were all pre-bought, but I did have a costumer, a seamstress, come on set that I just knew from university. And on our first rehearsal day, I had her tailor everyone's costumes just subtly to them, because that is really important. And so everything fits better than it could do.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, because I've seen some fan films where, things definitely had to be pinned quite a bit, and you can kind of notice it. Okay, so anyway, you say you're going to be releasing this when?
The trailer obviously has been out on the 16th, and that was I hope this is obviously being parallel with that. So that's the first thing to the world of have a look, and I think brings quite a high bar. The film has gone through the process of being sent out to pre-release people that I trust, I want feedback from, and because of my links to Trek Yards, I'm sending a copy to Doug Drexler and Rick Sternbach and get their feedback, even if it's just good job or yeah, that's okay, and I've joked, I'll take some things they say and put on the DVD as like, Doug Drexler says this, because they're friends of mine, a lot of them, and people like Tobias Richter, who's given me notes throughout the years, actually, because we've been friends for like about 3 years now. So I'm aiming for the film to be out when that process is done. Those final tweaks when the legends give their feedback. Some stuff I can't redo, like I can't refilm anybody. They've moved on, several of them are married now with kids. That's long gone.
And they probably don't look like they did 4 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. But the subtle sound thing, CG obviously, although I've got some good feedback on that. So I'm hoping to release the film within 30 days of this trailer's release. Obviously, the reason for this trailer's release on this day was because that was the anniversary of the Kickstarter. It was launched 5 years ago on the 16th. And so the symmetry, I thought, I couldn't help but release it on that day. And so either I release the full film on the anniversary of the end of the Kickstarter, or if it's done a week before, I'll just release it a week before. So 30 days from the 16th is my idea. So March, mid-March.
And it's convenient for me because it's Fan Film Friday.
Yeah.
You see? Cool. If you'd been releasing it on a Thursday, I would be completely screwed. And on a Saturday, but tomorrow it's going to look really great, guys. So, thank you very much for the symmetry, falling on a Friday. Release the final one on a Friday, too, and then I can do this all over again. What else do you have planned in your fan film life? I mean, the culmination of 5 years of work. Do you suddenly retire, or is there something else coming up?
Oh, God. I mean, just think of how different the fan film world is in these 5 years. Like I said, I was like the third crowdfunded fan film, which is weird because it 5 years later, and now we're in a very weird environment, but we're far enough away from the unhappy times that hopefully, I'm attached to other projects that I've been working on for about a year now. Two projects for about a year now doing VFX, and they're so incredible and exciting to either be filmed, at least filmed this year, if not released this year. And so I've been active in if you watch a whole lot of films, I've done CG for them, and again, this year is the year of that work. But yeah, I have an idea for another one. I'm daft, I like creating, and again, where I am now with my CG, my green screening, I'm on the upper tier, but again, 5 years of learning, This has been a thing. I'm, again, filmmaking is my passion. So I have an idea for another film. That might be my final sort of swan song to fan films. I'm not sure. Like I say, I've got the number one Stargate fan film. Don't expect this to be number one Star Trek, but as long as it's appreciated and enjoyed. But I have a third one in mind. It's very different. And just like this one had never been done, a full multi-era fan film. And I will say there is a Discovery reference in one of the, or two of the scenes. Obviously, it wasn't filmed. It was filmed before Into Darkness came out. So, I mean, I think. So, it was, you know, long before Discovery. But that still counts as an era. So, I included a reference, but not anything major. But it was a first full era, TOS, TWOC, Enterprise, Voyager, /DS9, First Contact, TNG. All the eras, all the costumes. The next film is going to be another, no one's done it before yet. And shorter. Shorter, easier to film. And I've already begun having my team to build 3D sets for it. Because I want to have them all done before we even film. I haven't even written the script yet. But if I have everything ready, then the editing process should be relatively quick. I do want to crowdfund it, but minimally, just to fund it. I mean, that's why you crowdfund. But have it released probably maybe as a record.
So you're not going to, you know, crowdfund a little bit extra just for, you know, sushi or new tires on your car or anything like that.
I don't drive and I don't like sushi.
Oh.
No. Just fund what I need, and then anything else goes to all expenses to people that I might be flying in or flying to them or whatever I'm doing.
Yeah, because everything has to happen in the UK, I'm guessing. You're not coming over.
Well, that is an interesting question. There is international implications to what I'm doing. In a good way. It's not a little project. But again, I've made connections in the last 5 years. So there's stuff I can do. But I have a studio. Not my personal studio, but the university studio that I've used, and I was the biggest user for years and years. And while they've changed their staff and their protocols, I can still use it and get access to their cameras and their stuff for a fee and stuff. And it's just, why not use a green screen studio you have that's got like, I don't know, 10 foot either, well, 10 foot in as a walk on. So probably film it in England, because at the end of the day, if it's a green screen film, you're gonna have the best key possible, and a studio will, even a university one, will do that.
Well, that's cool. Now, I do want to ask, because you did say, you know, their scripts are going to obviously be shorter. How long is Anomaly going to be, Temporal Anomaly going to be?
So when I wrote it, like I said, it was pitched as a 20-minute film, and that's on the Kickstarter, a 20-minute short film. But when I wrote it, it was very much, I wrote the story at a pace it had to be told. Because like I said, I had years of filmmaking experience before that, so I knew how to write a thing, and I knew how to pace it. And the first edit ended up being about 56 minutes. That's why it took longer to film and more time than I thought. It was a full narrative, and it's got three acts, and I knew what I was doing, if I didn't realize what I was doing, if that makes sense. And so, yeah, it's about a 48-ish minute live-action piece with credits, with titles, and that will have to be massaged, because there's a lot of people to thank, honestly. It's been years of work, and I want to thank everyone that gave me early work that I've stopped using, because everyone that helped me along the road deserves a mention, because without their help, without their support, not financially, not necessarily anything that went into our film, but without their support and thinking this is a good production, I wouldn't have been able to make it. So yeah, 50-ish minutes, a full episode of TOS, so more than an episode of TNG, but about an episode of TOS.
There you go. And I have to ask the obvious question here. Obviously, it's longer than 15 minutes, or half an hour, as the guidelines say. You're using the word Star Trek in your title. I'm guessing those clips I see of Picard and Riker are going to be in your finished episode. So essentially, you're not really following the guidelines. And then I'm sure that some people would say, well, because you made it in 2013, 2014, 2015, or wherever, you're pre-guidelines anyway, so you're kind of grandfathered in, if people believe in that. So you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, sure. I mean, like you said, I wrote it before there was even, you know, anything big budget to any fan film. And so I wrote it as it needed to be written. And you're right, there are clips from the show, because at the end of the day, a story I wanted to tell needs to be told. And I'm not here to give up 5 years of work when my only goal is to release something that is Star Trek, that feels Star Trek, and that people can enjoy. And so, you know, if I was to cut out, if it's 50 minutes, if I was to cut out 20 minutes of this film, it wouldn't even be, you couldn't even tell the story in that amount of time. So, you know, and fundamentally my philosophy is, this will get finished, it'll get released, if CBS has a problem with the film, I mean, it's not the best quality, it doesn't not going to look like Star Trek, then that's up to them. I'm not going to push it. I'm not going to try and, you know, get a million views or anything. It's just a absolute love letter to Star Trek. And I wish I released it last year, 50th anniversary. That would have been perfect, because, again, every year. But, you know, it's a story that has to be told in a certain way. And I don't want to compromise the story, because I've, you know, 2013 me wrote it that way. And, I mean, how many people dedicated, I mean, I got a cast of like 10, they dedicated a week and a half to film it. It invalidates so much of their time, you know, and you couldn't tell the story in 30 minutes. So, you know, it'll get done, and all 17 backers will get the full film. And that, those are the people I have to satisfy. You know, only them.
Those 17 people deserve their fan film.
Exactly, and a lot better than it was originally pitched. So if CBS want to take it down, that's up to them, but people who pledged get to see it, and that's my only obligation. And it'll be out there for people to see if they don't. But we shouldn't have a problem. I mean, fan films have ignored them after the fact anyway. And my fan film, I do believe, is in the best spirit of fan films. And yet, improved as the fan who made it has improved, and now is something that is just watchable and enjoyable as its own piece. You know, it doesn't even need to be Star Trek, and obviously that as is a lot of it. So I'm not worried. I mean, it's a, you know, we'll see, but I hope it's fine. They did say on a case-to-case basis, so hopefully they like it and they think, oh, okay, cool.
But going forward, you know, are you going to be following the guidelines more closely with what you're doing next?
Well, I do not have enough free time in my life to create something that big again. Certainly not. No, I mean, Trek Yards is full-time and I have other sort of side things. No, it'll be, I'm aiming for a 20-minute production. So I'm kind of like, the story isn't 30 minutes, but it's also not one 15-minute part. So, you know. Yeah. It'll be in the circles of the guidelines, because I'm not going to try and do anything more, and I'm not even going to try and raise 10% of the allocated 50,000. Not even going to try and raise that. So, yeah, it's more a short film, but because I'm doing everything, that lowers the budget. I do the green screen and the VFX. That's the stuff that takes the longest and takes the most, you know, production budget. So, or I can do.
So do you think the guidelines are a good thing, a bad thing, or they just are, you know, reality?
Now, that's funny, because obviously I was Trek Yards. That's more of a loaded question than if I was just Temporal Army's director. They are what they are. They're guidelines. And that's up to you, me, the fans, CBS, to look at them as they are. They can't legally bind anything. They can't approve anything legally. They can't, you know, it's guidelines. And everything's case by case, as it was before. And as it should be. But if you blatantly, you know, do things that are silly and ridiculous, then that goes against the spirit of them as well. So, yeah. Hope that was vague enough.
No, that's a fine answer. You know, actually, you know, as the person who founded the Small Access Group, you know, a lot of people are surprised to find that I actually think the guidelines are a good thing. I think a couple of them just went too far. I think the no continuing series rule is too constraining, because there's a lot of folks like Project Potemkin, for example,
that, Advanced Majors, 30 fan films that, yeah, 30 arc story,
exactly. You know, it that, you know, these guys are trying their best to keep having fun. You know, it's the same people wearing the same costumes wanting to be on the same ship. Why tell them, okay, you've got two episodes and then, you know, you all have to start playing different characters on different ships? You know, why not just let them keep doing that? You know, that just doesn't seem to be a very fair requirement, in my opinion. And you know, we've talked about the 15-minute limit. I think that if you allow for an ongoing series and, you know, you kind of say, look, you can't chop your two-hour movie into 8 15-minute segments. So, you know, you basically have 30 minutes of storyline, the same way you do with sitcoms. You know, every episode of The Big Bang Theory has the same characters in the same setting, but each episode is about something different. You can have some ongoing storylines, but you can't make one two-hour-long Big Bang Theory movie and chop it up into a four-part episode. You know, not that CBS is listening to me, but, you know, if anybody is watching this or listening, that would be my biggest pet peeve of the guidelines. That, and of course, the You know, you can't pay anybody, you can't have any professionals, whoever worked on Star Trek in your fan film. That one just drives me nuts. I understand why they did it. I just, you know, there's elements of...
Well, as I said before, it's case by case as it was before, and they've said that.
Yeah.
You know, I now say we've got an interview with them coming out soon. You know, Vip Mignogna's final two-parter, which is basically... I waited to watch his two-part finale as a movie, because I thought that was how it should be watched, and I maintain, you know, back-to-back, without any break in between, that is the best fan film ever made. As a movie. As an absolute movie. And that story could not have been told in 2015s. Could not, and it should not have been broken up. You know, they had the creative drive to say, we're going to risk it, we're going to put it out and tell the story as it's meant to be told, and they produced the best fan film ever made. Best fan movie ever made. And that's incredible. And, you know, it is in the spirit of, you know, intention is key, and personal appearance is key, you know, how you represent what you want to do, and you know, it's all for Star Trek. I mean, why else are we creating Star Trek fan films? Is to tell something in the universe. And I, personally, I want to try and tell the best story, but it's also the story I want to tell, so some people might not enjoy that story. You know, I like time travel stories, I like alternate realities. That's my, I like those, some people just don't like those. You know, some people complain about Mirror Universe, Discovery, just as, oh, it's a Mirror Universe story. I'm like, okay, cool, Mirror Universe, that's a great avenue to take. That, you can't please everybody. But you want to tell this story, and I want to tell it as best as it can be, but I'm not going to try and make a, you know, a 30-episode, 60-minute series, because I need to have a job, I need to have bills, I mean, you know. So, I have a story I'd like to tell, I have players that have signed on, that I'm really, really excited to work with, and people that the fan community know. And by seeing the trailer, hopefully you could see I can do green screen keying pretty effectively.
Pretty darn good, yep.
you know, cameras and kit and stuff that I'm uniquely able to sort of borrow by going the one avenue that I have connections of. It's being invested for 4 years and helping them out for years. So I want to tell the best it can be. And as I've said to other productions and ones I'm part of, the best fan film, the best Star Trek fan film, is a great film that happens to take place in the Star Trek universe. It should be a great production in of itself, you know, about good characters with a good story that you can relate to. It's got good pace, good scripting, and it always helps if it's made by filmmakers that happen to be fans. You know, fans that make fan films are great, but they will not reach a level that you can just absorb as Star Trek. But some of us have a film background, and when we take a go at it, we aim for something more akin to what we see, either as a web series. You know, there's a great Doctor Who official webisode called Night of the Doctor with Paul McGann, and that was a very, very low budget, very, very cheap thing, reuse of set pieces, secret thing of 50th anniversary. And it looks as good as the show, but it was a webisode, 7 minutes, brilliantly written, brilliantly themed, and it's super low budget. So you can make something that looks as good as the real thing-ish, or that was an official production, they'd put the same cameras. But on the web, you can make something that looks really good. And what's funny about Star Trek, if you actually watch the multiple seasons, bar Discovery and bar, say, Generations or the later movies, they're filmed really flat, and not boring by any means, but very flat. And when you're doing a lot of digital stuff, that's not how it would look like now, if you're filming it now. So you can make a dated-looking film, but that feels like Star Trek, you know? I say with VFX, is my trick is trying to make Star Trek CGI 1.5. You know, I learned how to mimic their lighting style via doing Trek Yards. It's a documentary show, so you document and you create new clips that look like the show. So my CG is that same approach, but with more dynamic movement. Tobias Richter, he does Star Trek 2.0 with beautiful painting-like and, you know, vistas and amazing movements and just really too dynamic, just a smidge too dynamic, you know, too good. I'm Star Trek 1.5. It's the same feel, but without the limitations. And I've spoken to a ton of VFX people that worked on multiple shows, and they had limits that you would never consider, because they were silly. But the producers thought the audience wouldn't understand certain things that we as sci-fi fans can. I haven't got those limitations, and I'm a cinematographer by trade as well, so I put these cool angles and, you know, create Trek 1.5. So it's kind of modern in a sense, but also retro in a sense. But as long as it's a good story with a good script, then that's the main thing. Sorry, it was quite a long ramble, wasn't it?
Well, that's fine. The only thing I was going to insert in there at one point is that Tobias Richter does what Alec likes to call, and I agree, is starship porn. I could just basically watch, because I watch Tobias' stuff with the same visceral reaction as you know, when I watch.
he gets it, and he has the Trek understanding to know this ship can't do that much movement. This ship shouldn't be a turn that way, you know, and he's a damn good cinematographer. So all those things put together makes damn good work.
And you know, and your stuff, honestly, I am so excited to see this finished project sometime in March, as you say. And I'm sure that the rest of the fan film community, yeah, they didn't know about this last week, but they know about it now, and I'm sure they're all going to be talking about you for quite a while now.
Sounds like I have to update my Facebook page from 2014 images to this year. Give something better look at, yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm already looking forward to our next interview, which you've promised me when Star Trek Temporal Anomaly comes out. You know, I hope I get to see an early clip of it so I can do the interview before it comes out. But anyway, thank you very much for being here today and discussing things. And good luck, finish fast.
Yeah, final few days. And it's nice to finally be able to talk about it. You know, there's so many good behind-the-scenes stories, and these actors had so much fun doing it. And you know, some of them weren't Trek fans, and you had to teach them. And there's a million stories and a million production nightmares and fun things we did that I'd love to talk about when you obviously see the film and you see some of the really weird scenes and fun scenes and dark scenes and stupid scenes.
So folks, now that you've sat through this entire long interview and you're like, well, what else are they going to have to talk about in a month? Well, guess what? There's going to be new stuff to talk about.
Yes. The actual film.
All right. Well, thanks again, Sam. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.